I was asked to do a lesson explaining Lamentations. What does Lamentations mean? What's Lamentations about? How can we take advantage of the book of Lamentations? How can we draw things from it? How can we understand it? How can we know it better so that we can apply it to our lives? So why did we start in Jeremiah? Well, Jeremiah is the author of Lamentations. Jeremiah is the one who is writing those Lamentations. And what is Lamentations about? Basically, the Israelites sowed to the wind and they reaped the whirlwind. And the Lamentations are about Jeremiah standing in the midst of destruction, of death, of desolation, and seeing the results of the sins of the city of Jerusalem. That's what it's about. Verse 5 of Jeremiah 22, versículo 5 de Jeremías 22. But if you will not obey these words, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that this house will become a desolation. And that's exactly what happened. Verse 7, for I will set apart destroyers against you, Babylon, each with his weapon, and they will cut down your choicest cedars and throw them on the fire. Many nations will pass by the city, and they will say to one another, why has the Lord done this to this great city, Jerusalem? This great city, the city of God and the people of God, in the city that houses the king, that houses the temple where God sits, God's house, as Jesus says himself. This is, don't turn my father's house into a house of merchandise. What was he talking about? The temple. The city where the house of God is, how could it fall in such a way? Many nations will pass by the city and they will say to one another, why has the Lord done thus to this great city? Then they will answer, because they forsook the covenant of the Lord their God and bowed down to other gods and served them. Do not weep for the dead or mourn for him, but weep continually for the ones who goes away, for he will never return or see his native land. Let's turn over to Lamentations chapter 1. Lamentaciones capítulo 1. Remember verse 8. How could this have happened to this great city? How does Lamentations 1 start? How lonely sits the city. It's the same city. So Jeremiah is saying, God through Jeremiah is saying, I swear by myself, if you don't turn, this is going to become a desolation for you. All kinds of horrors are going to come upon you. There's going to be death. There's going to be destruction. There's going to be horrible things on all sides. And what happened? They did not turn from their evil. They did not follow Jeremiah's orders. And exactly what God said was going to happen, happened. So first of all, let's look at some overview of this before we get into the text. Notice how many verses are in chapter 1. 22. Why is there 22? Because it's an acrostic. It's an alphabetical acrostic that doesn't come through in the English, but in the original Hebrew, the first verse started with the first letter of Hebrew, the second verse with the second, the third verse with the third, and all the way to the end. So it's an acrostic. They had 22 letters in the alphabet at that time. That tells us what we'll see very clearly here in a second, that it's written in poetic form. And that makes it a little harder to decipher, a little harder to understand. I can understand why somebody looking at it would say, what exactly is going on? What city? Why is he talking in such strange language? Well, it's because it's poetry. But it is a historical event. He is describing a historical event. Also interesting to note, at this time, David and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have been taken to Babylon. But Jeremiah is left in the rubble. He's left in the destruction. He's not in king's palaces up in Babylon. He's left with death and destruction on all sides. And what's he see? What's he say? Verse 1. How lonely sits the city that was full of people. She has become like a widow who was once great among the nations. She who was a princess among the provinces has become a forced laborer. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. The one who was the crown jewel of all nations, the one where God sat, has now become the slave, has now become has fallen from the top of the hierarchy all the way to the bottom. Okay, verse 2, she weeps bitterly in the night, and her tears are on her cheeks. That's a good way to remember what these lamentations are about. And really, we should probably think of this as not one book, but as five separate lamentations. These are five separate tearful poems, we could say. That's what a lamentation is, a tearful poem. So we have five separate tearful poems. And you can imagine the tears running down Jeremiah's cheeks as he's writing these out, hitting his parchment, as he's seeing what has befallen his beloved city. She weeps bitterly in the night. This is talking about Jerusalem. It's personifying Jerusalem, okay? She weeps bitterly in the night, and her tears are on her cheeks. She has none to comfort her among all her lovers. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. They have become her enemies. So what was her problem? Jeremiah says, turn to God. What do they say? No, we're going to turn to the Egyptians. They're going to help us. That's all nice to say, turn to God, but we're more real. We're realists. We know we need some help from these chariots over here. So we're going to turn to the Egyptians, but now destruction has come, and who are you going to turn to? The Egyptians are no longer there. They become your enemies. You can't trust in the arm of the Egyptians, as Jeremiah says. Judah has gone into exile. Versículo 3, verse 3. Judah has gone into exile under affliction and under harsh servitude. She dwells among the nations, but she has found no rest. All her pursuers have overtaken her in the midst of distress. The roads of Zion are in mourning because no one comes to the appointed feast. What a picture that is. Now remember, this is all in poetic language. The roads of Zion, the same roads that people would be celebrating, would be praising God as they come to the feast. Now what's replaced that joy and that praise of God? Mourning. No one's coming to the appointed feast. Why? Because the city is ruined. The buildings are broken down. Families are torn apart. People are dead. The temple destroyed. There's no appointed feast. It's all over. The whole world, from the perspective of a Jew, has been destroyed. The roads of Zion are in mourning because no one comes to the appointed feast. All her gates are desolate. Her priests are groaning. Her virgins are afflicted, and she herself is bitter. Her adversaries have become her masters. Her enemies prosper, for the Lord has caused her grief because of the multitude of her transgressions. Why has all this happened? And something for us. We could have the same attitude that these people in Jerusalem had. What's that? Jeremiah is always telling us something negative. Jeremiah is always using fear. And you know, no matter what time or what place, there's always somebody preaching something negative. Somebody's always using fear because it's a very effective tool. Just turn on the news, you'll find it. Either side, one saying, be afraid of this. The other side is saying, be afraid of that. And everyone's using fear to coerce you into following them. It's a very effective tool that doesn't take a lot of skill to use. So Jeremiah, I think that's what you're doing. After all, the Assyrians came not too long ago, and the 10 northern tribes are gone, but we're still here. And you know why, Jeremiah? Because we've got the city. We've got the temple, the city of God, the temple of God, where God sits. And furthermore, the Christ is going to come from David. How could all that happen if the city is destroyed, if the temple is destroyed? So we are bulletproof. We can think that as well. I'm bulletproof because, well, I come to services, I give money, I donate my time, I donate all these things. Therefore, nothing can touch me. I'm not going to be moved. No, you better realize there are consequences to sin. That's one of the great lessons of Lamentations. There are consequences to sin. Don't think you're above receiving the consequences of your sins. You are not. Verse 6, versículo 6, de capítulo 1, all her majesty has departed from the daughter of Zion. Her princes have become like deer. They have found no pasture, and they have fled without strength before the pursuer. The most mighty have become the weakest, and even then they can't find what they need. In the days of her affliction and homelessness, Jerusalem remembers all her precious things that were from days of old. When her people fell into the land of the hand of the adversary, and no one helped her, the adversary saw her, they mocked at her ruin. Jerusalem sinned greatly. Therefore, she had become an unclean thing. All who honored her despise her, because they have seen her nakedness. Even she herself groans and turns away. She's languishing. This is a city being personified. She's languishing in the bed that she has made. She sinned greatly. She turned from the Lord. She turned to Egypt, turned to the powers of the nations around her. And now she's being punished for it. Verse 10, versículo 10. The adversary has stretched out his hand over all her precious things, for she has seen the nations enter her sanctuary, the ones whom you commanded that they should not enter into your congregation, and all her people groan, seeking bread. They have given their precious things for food to restore their lives themselves. See, O Lord, and look, for I am despised. Again, that's the nation being personified, or the city being personified. That's Jerusalem speaking. But think about that. In times past, everything was good. Everything was pleasant. People had precious things. People had money, nice clothes, nice houses. And now they're trading in their luxuries for what? For their necessities. So no longer are we afforded luxuries, peace, prosperity. Now we had to sell all that stuff just to meet our daily needs. Verse 12, is it nothing to all you who pass this way? This is the city looking around, seeing all the people passing who seem not to care. Not to care about the destruction that's come on this city. Is it nothing to all you who pass this way? Look and see if there is any pain like my pain, which was severely dealt out to me, which the Lord inflicted on the day of his fierce anger from on high. There's no confusion about who did this. It wasn't, well, you know, we should have increased our defense budget and then maybe we could have won against the Babylonians. No, it was God who did this. From on high he sent into my bones, and it prevailed over them. He has spread a net for my feet. He has turned me back. He has made me desolate, faint all day long. The yoke of my transgressions is bound by his hand. They are knit together. They have come upon my neck. He has made my strength fail. The Lord has given me into the hands of those against whom I am not able to stand. The Lord has rejected all my strong men in my midst. He has called an appointed time against me to crush my young men. The Lord has trodden as in a winepress the virgin daughter of Judah. For these things I weep. My eyes run down with water, because far from me is a comforter, one who restores my soul. My children are desolate because the enemy has prevailed. So the city, again being personified, looking at all my young strong men, my young wartime men being crushed. My children are going about in the street looking for food. It's a horrible scene. Versículo 17, verse 17. Zion stretches out her hands. There is no one to comfort her. The Lord has commanded concerning Jacob that the ones round about him should be his adversaries. Jerusalem has become an unclean thing among them. The Lord is righteous, for I have rebelled against his command. Hear now, all people, and behold my pain. My virgins and my young men have gone into captivity. I call to my lovers, but they have deceived me. The deceptiveness of sin, the deceptiveness of the world. I'm going to count on these people over here. I'm going to count on the wisdom of the world, the pleasures of sin for a season. That's what I'm going to build my life on. That's the foundation. No, they're going to deceive you. In the end, you'll find yourself just like the city of Jerusalem. I called to my lovers, but they deceived me. My priest and my elders perished in the city while they sought food to restore their strength themselves. So where would you go if you were in this situation? Well, let's go to the elders. Let's go to the priests. They'll know what to do. They're the leaders. They're the most wise. They can't help you. Why? They're looking for bread. They're scavenging for bread just to take care of themselves. They've been brought to their knees, the ones that survived. Verse 20, "See, O Lord, for I am in distress. My spirit is greatly troubled. My heart is overturned within me, for I have been very rebellious." Why is all this happening? "For I have been very rebellious. In the street the sword slays. In the house it is like death. For they have heard that I groan. There is no one to comfort me. I've turned on the Lord, and now the Lord, I've gone away from the Lord, and the Lord has gone away from me. There's no one to comfort me. All my enemies have heard of my calamity." What's their reaction? "They are glad that you have done it. Oh, that you would bring the day which you have proclaimed, that they may become like me." Basically, the tools that you used to punish me, may they be punished as well, because they're sinful as well. "Let all their wickedness come before you, and deal with them as you have dealt with me. For all my transgressions, for my groans are many, and my heart is faint." A tearful poem. You can imagine Jeremiah in the midst of the city, looking around at this once beautiful, great city, buildings destroyed, people dead, families torn apart, families with the fathers, the sons gone, families with the mothers gone, children wandering around, scavenging for bread, looking for some help, for something to give them direction. And he's seeing all this, and he's tearfully writing this poem. Now, chapter 2 is a different poem. It's a different poem. Notice how many verses are in it. 22 again. It's the same thing. It's an acrostic that is alphabetical. It starts with A, B, C, D, all the way down to the end of their alphabet. At that time, had 22 letters. Now, notice in the first poem, in chapter 1, the pronoun that was principal was her. Her was the city. All these things that have happened to her, the great city. In chapter 2, or in poem number 2, the pronoun of choice is he, that is God. This is about God. Who did this? What has become of this great city, and who has done this? We're going to probably have to skip around a little more here. And we'll probably only get to the end of chapter 3, but I think knowing the things we know, you could read chapter 4 and 5 on your own. It's pretty straightforward once you understand the setting. Versículo 1 de capítulo 2 de Lamentaciones, verse 1 of chapter 2. "How the Lord has covered the daughter of Zion with a cloud in his anger. He has cast from heaven to earth the glory of Israel, and has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. The Lord has swallowed up, he has not spared, all the habitations of Jacob in his wrath. He has thrown down the strongholds of the daughter of Judah. He has brought them down to the ground. He has profaned the kingdom and its princes. The things that were high, the things that were holy, God has brought them crashing down to the earth. In fierce anger, he has cut off all the strength of Israel. He has drawn back his right hand from before the enemy." What a picture that is. The enemy's always wanting to destroy Israel. God's just removed his hand, letting them in. "And he has burned in Jacob like a flaming fire, consuming round about. He has bent his bow like an enemy. He has set his right hand like an adversary and slain all that were pleasant to the eye in the tent of the daughter of Zion. He has poured out his wrath like fire. The Lord has become like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. He has swallowed up all its palaces. He has destroyed its strongholds and multiplied in the daughter of Judah mourning and moaning. And he has violently treated his tabernacle like a garden booth." Wouldn't that be the boast of the inhabitants of Jerusalem? "We cannot be touched." Why? Well, guess what? The temple's right there. The temple is right there. And guess what? Even if we're bad, even if we're rebellious, is God really going to destroy his own house? I mean, you tell me, is he? What's it say? And he has violently treated his tabernacle, his dwelling place, like a garden booth. He has destroyed his appointed meeting place. Well, if God destroys the temple, how are we going to obey God? And how are we going to do that till the temple is rebuilt? That doesn't make any sense, Jeremiah. You're being a little dramatic, Jeremiah. You're being a fear-monger, Jeremiah. And he has despised the king and priest in the indignation of his anger. The Lord has rejected his altar. He has abandoned his sanctuary. He has delivered into the hand of the enemy the walls of her palaces. They have made a noise in the house of the Lord, as in the day of an appointed feast. So there's going to be much noise in the house in the days of an appointed feast. Well, there was a lot of noise, but it wasn't a feast. It was a slaughter. The Lord determined to destroy the wall of the daughter of Zion. He has stretched out a line. He has not restrained his hand from destroying, and he has caused rampart and wall to lament. They languish together. Her gates have sunk into the ground. He has destroyed and broken her bars. You can have all the defense you want. You can have all the structures you want. You can train your men as well as you want. You can have as many of them as you want. This thing is appointed by God. You are going to be brought to your knees. Her king and her princes are among the nations. The law is no more. Also, her prophets find no vision from the Lord. Not only that, who would you go to at this time? I repent. I realize Egypt isn't going to come help. How? Because we're being slaughtered and I don't see them coming over the horizon. Therefore, I'm going to go to God. Last resort. Well, guess what? It's a little too late for that. Also, her prophets find no vision from the Lord. Well, what about the elders? Verse 10. Versículo 10 de capítulo 2. The elders of the daughter of Zion of Jerusalem sit on the ground. They are silent. Elders, give us some wisdom. Give us some knowledge. Tell us what we ought to do. Lead us out of this. They're silent. They have thrown dust on their heads. They have girded themselves with sackcloth. The virgins of Jerusalem have bowed their heads to the ground. My eyes fail because of tears. My spirit is greatly troubled. My heart is poured out on the earth because of the destruction of the daughter of my people. When little ones and infants fade in the streets of the city, they say to their mothers, where is grain and wine? Now just think about that picture. You're walking through the streets, and as you walk by, you see these little infants, innocent. It wasn't because of their sin that this great city has fallen, but what did they say to their mothers? Where are my necessities? How am I going to keep living? Where's my food? Where's my drink? How am I going to go on? They say to their mothers, where's grain and wine? As they faint, like a wounded man in the streets of the city, as their life is poured out on their mother's bosom. What a scene. Remember, there are consequences to sin. Don't go thinking there aren't. There are consequences. How shall I admonish you? Versículo 13, verse 13. How shall I admonish you? To what shall I compare you, O daughter of Jerusalem? To what shall I liken you as I comfort you, O virgin daughter of Zion? For you, your ruin is as vast as the sea. Who can heal you? Well, I know who can heal us. What about those prophets that were telling us everything was all right while Jeremiah was giving us this bad news? Surely they can heal us. Versículo 14, verse 14. Your prophets have seen for you false and foolish visions. And they have not exposed your iniquity. Your doctor has not told you that there was something severely wrong with you. And now it's progressed so far that they're useless. They should have told you way back before all of this happened. Now it's too late. They told you everything was fine. Everything's good. They have not exposed your iniquity so as to restore you from your captivity. But they have seen for you false and misleading oracles. All who pass along the way, how do the nations around Judah, around Jerusalem, feel about this? All who pass along the way clap their hands in derision at you. They hiss and shake their heads at the daughter of Jerusalem. Is this the city of which they said, the perfection of beauty, a joy to all the earth? All your enemies have opened their mouths wide against you. They hiss and gnash their teeth. They say, we have swallowed her up. Surely this is the day for which we waited. We waited for the fall of Jerusalem, and now it's here. We've done it. We've accomplished it. We have reached it. We have seen it. How could that even happen? How could the city of God, with the temple of God, protected by God, how could that be overtaken? Verse 17, versículo 17. The Lord has done what he purposed. He has accomplished his word which he commanded from days of old. He has thrown down without sparing. He has caused the enemy to rejoice over you. He has exalted the might of your adversaries. Their heart cried out to the Lord. O wall of the daughter of Zion, let your tears run down like a river day and night. Give yourself no relief. Let your eyes have no rest. Arise, cry aloud in the night. At the beginning of the night, watches, pour out your heart like water. Before the presence of the Lord, lift up your hands to him for the life of your little ones who are faint because of hunger at the head of every street. See, O Lord, and look with whom you dealt thus. Should women eat their offspring, the little ones who were born healthy? Should priests and prophets be slain in the sanctuary of the Lord? What are these last verses we've just read about? Jeremiah pleading for mercy, begging that God would have compassion, that the punishment would be abated, would be lessened. Isn't it enough what has happened to this great city? Versículo 21, verse 21. On the ground in the streets lie young and old. My virgins and my young men have fallen by the sword. You have slain them in the day of your anger. You have slaughtered, not sparing. You called, as in the day of an appointed feast, my terrors on every side. Okay, let's stop there. What a thing to say. You called in the day, as in the day of an appointed feast, my terrors on every side. What's it saying there? What happens in the appointed feast? What happens at the Passover? Where do people come from? All over the world. What's he saying? My fears, as many as they may be, from every side of the world, have all congregated, and now I'm having to suffer them. Fears from this side, fear from that side, they've all come together. And now I have to endure these terrors on all sides. What a picture. And there was no one who escaped or survived in the day of the Lord's anger. Those whom I bore and reared, my enemy annihilated them. The strong, the weak, all annihilated in desolation. What a horrible scene this is. Okay, we have a third poem, and notice how many verses are in this one. It's not 22, it's 66. What is that? That's 22 three times. So it does the same thing, it just does it three times. A, B, C, D to Z are their letters, so you understand. A, B, C to Z, A, B, C to Z, three times. It makes three revolutions, okay? And we're going to go through this. We'll probably only make it halfway through this, but we're going to get as far as we can. Now, the first poem was her, the city, Jerusalem. The second poem was he, God. The third poem is I. Who's I? Jeremiah. Jeremiah is who I is. So now it becomes personal. How's it start? Versículo 1 de capítulo 3. Verse 1 of chapter 3. I am the man who has seen affliction. And if you know anything about the story of Jeremiah, you would say, amen. Absolutely. Because of the rod of his wrath, he has driven me and made me walk in darkness and not in light. Surely against me he has turned his hand repeatedly all the day. Who's he talking about, by the way? God. He has caused my flesh and my skin to waste away. He has broken my bones. He has besieged and encompassed me with bitterness and hardship. In dark places he has made me dwell like those who have long been dead. What a message. Come follow God. Look at all the benefits. But it's the truth. It's the truth. And we have a tendency to sell only the positive, but there are negatives. What if I have a great life? What if I have only joys on earth, only pleasures on earth? Larry, not too long ago, mentioned something about some of the new songs, Blue Skies and Rainbows. And it's going to be all, it's basically prosperity gospel adjacent. It's all going to be good. It's all going to be great. Everything's going to work out for you. Sometimes you might be called to live like Jeremiah. Sometimes you might be called to live like Paul, or like Ezekiel, or like Jesus. Sometimes you might have a life of hardship, of trial. Is there any hope for you there? Well, we're about to see. Yes, there is hope. Even in the darkest times, even when the surface level things are not going as you would like them to go, even when the things that we would like to think will happen, security, peace, health, those things don't pan out, no, there's still something for you. There's still something much better for you, no matter what happens in the temporal. Versículo 6, verse 6, in dark places he has made me dwell like those who have long been dead. He's basically put me in a tomb. He has walled me in so that I cannot go out. He has made my chain heavy. I'm incarcerated. Even when I cry out and call for help, he shuts out my prayer. He has blocked my ways with hewn stone. He has made my paths crooked. I can't get out. I'm trapped. I can't find my way out. He's blocked me in. He's confused my way. He is to me like a bear lying in wait, like a lion in secret places. He has turned aside my ways and torn me to pieces. He has made me desolate. This remind you of anything? If you've read the book of Job recently, this is very similar to the book of Job. I'd recommend reading that book to everybody. It's an amazing book that we can learn from no matter what your situation is. It's an absolutely amazing book. Verse 11, versículo 11, say, he has turned aside my ways and torn me to pieces. He has made me desolate. He bent his bow and set me as a target for the arrow. He made the arrows of his quiver to enter into my inward parts. I have become a laughingstock to all my people, their mocking song all the day. All my people, and Jeremiah, what was Jeremiah saying? At the end there he was saying, don't resist Babylon. How do you think that's going to be taken? What if China was invading the U.S. and I said, don't resist them? What are you going to call me? A no-good, dirty traitor. And that's how they treated Jeremiah. He's a no-good, dirty traitor. He wants us to make a pact with Babylon. Why did he want that? Because God told him this is going to happen. There's nothing you can do to avoid this, so you better make peace here. But they rejected him. So he's treated like a traitor. Verse 15, he has filled me with bitterness. He has made me drunk with wormwood. He has broken my teeth with gravel. He has made me cower in the dust. My soul has been rejected from peace. I have forgotten happiness. It's been so long since I've been happy, I've forgotten what it even felt like. Can you say that? I think even in the state of our world now, that would be a far stretch for any one of us. We are blessed beyond measure. My soul has been rejected from peace. I have forgotten happiness. So I say, my strength has perished, and so has my hope from the Lord. But now happens one of the most miraculous turns in the whole Bible. So all of this is still happening. All of this has happened. Jeremiah is still in the same situation. Jerusalem remains destroyed. The people remain dead. Some people have been taken off. Children still in the street looking for bread. But what happens? Remember, verse 19, versículo 19, remember my affliction and my wandering, the wormwood and bitterness. Surely my soul remembers and is bowed down within me. Then I recall to my mind, therefore, I have hope. What's he recall to his mind? The Lord's loving kindness indeed never ceases, for his compassions never fail. Now, what changed?
Has the temple been rebuilt? Have the buildings been rebuilt? Have the slain come back to life? Is there bread? Is there prosperity? No, nothing has changed. So what changed? Jeremiah changed. His perspective changed. Now I'm not looking at all these horrors, all these atrocities around me. I'm looking somewhere else. I'm looking to heaven. Therefore, I have hope. The Lord's loving kindness indeed never ceased, for his compassions never fail. Great is your faithfulness. How could you say that, Jeremiah? In the midst of death and destruction, how could you say that? You're watching this kid struggling because he's faint, looking for bread, asking his mother, pathetically, where's some food? Where's some water? How could you say this? Verse 24, the Lord is my portion, says my soul, therefore I have hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the person who seeks him. Not to those who say, God, give me this, and if I don't get it, I'm out. I'm going to go find something else. No, the person that waits, the person that even looks beyond all the atrocities that happens in this life, who puts their faith in God, not only for things in this, not treating God as a gumball machine. Well, if I follow God, God's going to give me what I want. No, it's something much deeper than that. Even when all around me is destruction, all around me is sadness and sorrow, I'm going to put my faith in God because there's something that's beyond this life. And we're about to end with these probably next 10 verses here. We ran out of time. Versículo 16, Verse 26. It is good that he waits silently for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man that he should bear the yoke in his youth. Is there anything that good comes from suffering? Yes, there's something good. You're refined. You're not spoiled. What happens to a child when they get everything they want? When they're never told no? They're spoiled. You need some discipline. You have need of discipline. And when you're suffering, and when you make it through the suffering, what happens? You become refined. You become stronger. You become resilient. And furthermore, you can see with better clarity. You can see that the things of this life are passing. Whether good or bad. Well, things are so great. Okay. Well, they're going to pass away. Things are so bad. Okay. Well, they're going to pass away. Either way, always be looking not to your immediate surroundings, but to your home in heaven. And that's what's going to keep you grounded. That's what's going to maintain your hope. Verse 26, versículo 20 says, it is good that he waits silently for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man that he should bear the yoke in his youth. Let him sit alone and be silent, since he has laid it on him. What's he talking about? God is the one who's brought this. So, this logically, should you be complaining? No. Sit in silence. Let him put his mouth in the dust. Don't even think about complaining. Perhaps there's hope. Let him get his cheeks to the smiter. Let him be filled with reproach, for the Lord will not reject forever. For if he causes grief, then he will have compassion according to his abundant loving kindness. For he does not afflict willfully or grieve the sons of men, to crush under his feet all the prisoners of the land, to deprive a man of justice in the presence of the Most High, to defraud a man in his lawsuit. Of these things the Lord does not approve. Who is there who speaks and it comes to pass unless the Lord has commanded it? Remember who's in control here. Remember when you're tempted to complain, when you're tempted to lose hope, when you're tempted to think that evil is won, remember who's in control. It is not to, versículo 38, verse 38, it is not from the mouth of the Most High that both good and ill go forth. What should any living mortal or any man offer complaint in view of his sins? Let us examine and probe our ways and let us return to the Lord. I think we're going to have to stop there. So, as an overview, this book is composed of five tearful poems that are lamenting, that are crying over the state of Jerusalem and why was the Jerusalem in that state. because of her sins. Because they turned away from God, they trusted in the nations around them instead of God, they said, you know what, maybe trusting in God is a little old-fashioned. Maybe it's more rational to trust in Egypt. After all, they have all those chariots. After all, they have all those trained warriors. Maybe we ought to trust in them. No, that's a deceit. That's going to turn out to your detriment. You're going to have to pay for that. And we too, oftentimes, what are we tempted with? You're going through some hardship. Should you really seek counsel and comfort from the Bible? Should you really seek comfort from this ancient book written by fishermen? You hear that all the time, don't you? Why would you do that? That was written in the Iron Age. Look how much we've advanced. Shouldn't you go to this therapist? Shouldn't you go to this person of the world? Shouldn't you seek someone more intelligent to give you some guidance? That's going to turn out to be a deceit for you, and that's going to lead you to ruin. So be on guard. Don't think, as they thought, we're above reproach. We can't be brought down to the earth. I'm a Christian. I've been bought with the blood of Christ. I cannot be brought down to the earth. Careful. Yes, you can be brought down to the earth. The consequences of sin are real and they're swift. And you better not think that you are above them. Now, as we close, I want to go back to chapter 3 there and think about the transformation that Jeremiah had. As I mentioned, Larry talked about how older songs used to be more doctrinal. And now we have some of these new songs, blue skies and rainbows, everything's great, everything's wonderful, and it's going to remain so. Think of another song that's similar. Sing and be happy. How's that song start if you're familiar with it? If the skies above you are gray, you are feeling so blue. If your cares and burdens seem great all the whole day through. Let me paraphrase that. If your life is a mess, if your life is horrible, if you're suffering every day, what's it advise you to do? Does it say, well, give up? Or wait until things get better and then maybe you can have some chance of being happy? No, it says, sing and be happy in spite of the situation. Just as Jeremiah, in spite of all the things going on around him, he said, that doesn't matter. I remember that the Lord is gracious, that his gifts come new every morning. His gifts come to me every morning, I use them, and guess what? There's no fault the next morning because they've come again. So I'm going to be joyful. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to have hope. Even in the midst of the darkest times, there's a light that never goes out. There is hope in following God. No matter what the temporal circumstances are, we have hope. And there's nothing in this world that can change that. Another song, very similar. What's it say? Count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. Have you ever tried that? And has it surprised you? You say, oh, life is terrible, life is horrible, look at all these things that are happening. Maybe my spouse is dying. Maybe my child is dying. Maybe some horrible disease has come upon me. Well, take a little time to count your blessings, and you'll be surprised what the Lord has done, that God has given you things you did not deserve. And God has kept from you punishments that you did deserve. So our perspective has to be the same as Jeremiah's. Then I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope. The loving kindness indeed never cease, for his compassions never fail. What uncertainty is there in that statement? His compassions are successful 99.9% of the time. No, his compassions are successful 100% of the time. Every time. They never fail. Well, how can you say that?
The whole world is falling apart. The temple is destroyed. The Jewish world has ceased to exist. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I have hope in Him. The Lord is good to those who wait for Him, to the person who seeks me. The question to us as we leave, will you turn back or will you seek Him? Will you wait for Him? Or will you complain and turn away and rebel? Or will you submit yourself to God no matter the situation? Well, the answer is clear of what we ought to do. We have to submit, and we have to wait patiently, and we have to trust in Him who gives us hope no matter what goes on around us.